More Dirt and Sprague.
Do you trust someone who doesn't like a Pop-Tart?
Dirt.
Can I give you a hot take that might make people look at me and call me an idiot? I think Pop-Tarts are disgusting.
Sprague.
I used to raw dog Pop-Tarts religiously.
Dirt and Sprague.
I'm anti-Pop-Tart.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number three, Dirt and Sprague here, Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody. Hope your Wednesdays are off to a good start. It is a hump day. We have a unfortunate news to pass along that we just found out. Matt Miller will not be able to go today.
Literally just found that out. He'll be tomorrow.
He will be tomorrow.
Same time, right? 8:45?
Something popped up for him, and so he will not be able to go. So we will talk to Matt Miller tomorrow at 8:45.
Now, will we actually talk to him tomorrow, or will they get bumped to Football Friday?
Ooh, we get a bump. I mean, I'll go to a Football Friday if he needs me to go to a Football Friday.
Yeah, I will too.
Where's our excitement level for the draft? It's 2 weeks from tomorrow.
I don't think
when it begins.
This draft has no juice.
No juice draft, huh?
Not from me.
Okay.
I'm into it. I want to see if we get any late round trades.
Is it because of the lack of quarterback?
Yeah.
The known of the number one pick? What is it?
Yeah, all of the above? All of it.
Yeah.
I think when you have less than 1.5 quarterbacks that people really care about,
I'm still taking the over. What's the over-under on quarterbacks? Is it 1.5?
It's 1.5.
I would still take the over.
Sure. Ty Simpson might be the first pick at the top of the next round, and that's where that could go. Look, it's not that you don't have game-changing players here. You might have 6 to 7 edge rushers in the first round. You might have 6 to 7 offensive linemen drafted in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Those drafts are never as exciting as having 4 or 5 quarterbacks to debate on.
Yeah, no doubt. You're right.
It's the same. It's not a Penix, Bo Nix, Drake May, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels draft.
Right.
That was a lot of fun because we're like, I like that guy. I don't like that guy. I like all these guys. I don't like that one guy. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have that excitement. And Mendoza, he's not going to be there. And, you know, I understand why he's not. Also, the funniest part of this draft is the quarterback and the team he has to go to. I had a listener ask me this. Has there been less of a organizational look and sound of a player than Mendoza being a Raider?
Yeah, it's not a fit.
It's not a fit, but it might end up being a good fit.
It could be if he ends up being a good player, sure.
He could be one of those quirky, weird, you know, Kirkers would, channel his inner scream at you post-game.
How do you like me now?
That?
Yeah.
I think Mendoza has that.
That's who he is. You're hoping he's a better version, more athletic version of Kirk Cousins.
And he'll get to learn from Kirk Cousins.
Yes, he will. That had my guy.
What a quarterback room.
My guy's back, baby.
They, as a social media experience, they as an organization need a lot of goodwill to be built up. They've done largely nothing since their Super Bowl appearance.
It's been a disaster. They got Guerrero walking around on the sidelines.
So, not that you need to know this as the backstory, but I'll set it up this way. The Puffin has come back to the land. The Puffin bird, mm-hmm. famously banned in Dunes. It's their logo. The Puffin largely lives in the ocean. They have come back to the land. That's where they mate.
Okay.
They have,
they're getting it on.
They're getting it on. They have Puffin nest cams that you can watch at all times. And it's quite interesting. They just sit in these rock nests.
What's Puffin sex look like?
Yeah, it's very Puffin.
Okay.
You know, imagine what you think a Puffin does. That's what they do.
Okay. Are they as ruthless as ducks?
No.
Good.
They're not as forcible as ducks, okay. is what I would say.
They take you out to dinner first.
Yeah,
they want to nag you a little bit.
Yeah, they a little caca, okay. You know,
turn
whatever.
On some Netflix and chill it.
They're Netflix and chilling in those rock caves.
That's good.
I need that cam in the Raider quarterback room. I need live cams to watch Mendoza and Kirk Cousins operate. That is something I would put on at 1:30 p.m. on a Tuesday.
Yeah, I would watch a lot of that. I would watch a lot of that room.
And you can do it before they start getting into film breakdown and play stuff. Like, give me that when they both walk in, they open up their 3-ring binders, because you know they have the proper binder for
have
this.
Have to have the proper binder.
And you know that they both open it right from the outside, not the middle in.
Yep.
And I just want to hear what that conversation is like. Hey, what did you think of last night's HGTV television episode? And he'd be like, oh, it's delightful. I really liked the warm green color he painted in the restroom.
Did you go to Kohl's this weekend, too? I went to Kohl's this weekend,
did
too.
Did you see the khaki sale? Like, I just need the dialogue. I need the off-football dialogue, because, you know, by the way, they're not calling it a bathroom. They're calling it the restroom.
It's the restroom. I need to use the restroom. May I be excused to go use the restroom?
They're probably going
to
trade notes. What did you think of church service last weekend? Yeah. You know, I thought he hit a really good point of service and devotion. What did you think on that? Well, I thought the verse he used was, kind of perfect in a roundabout way. It's all circled back if you really noticed it.
How long until they're finishing each other's sentences? You know they're going to get to that level. They are the same person. Kirk Cousins and Fernando Mendoza are the same person.
The same human
One's
being.
Just a little bit bigger and a little more athletic, but they are as goofy and as white as you could possibly be. And they look in the mirror and they see each other. One's just an older version with a torn Achilles.
I have them sitting in the quarterback room in complete silence, writing notes, waiting for the quarterback coach and Kubiak to walk in. And I have it at a dead silence, and all of a sudden, I hear Mendoza. Did you get a new brown belt this weekend? Did I notice a brown belt?
It looks great over there, like, Kirk. You're looking good, man.
I need that in my life as Raider quarterback.
You're looking good, Kirky. Yeah, so we got that going for us in 2 weeks. No Matt Miller today. I am excited for the draft, but I'm with you. There's just more. There's more juice involved when you get quarterbacks that are going, and you got a lot of guys who might go in the top 10, and we're debating. It is there's a frustration there for me as a fan, though, at the same time of, like, why do I care so much about one position, and shouldn't we still enjoy the draft? But it's absolutely
Especially Darnold can win one for you,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, like, Darnold's a retread who, and I ended up winning a title, and Look at that. Now he's maybe going to get another big payday, and he could be the next, top 10 quarterback in the league that came back out of nowhere. Like, all these, they're going to be a lot of impactful players, and you might end up with a couple of quarterbacks from this class who go on to be great players in the NFL. They just don't get taken in the first round. Like, that still happens in the National Football League, but I am with you that there doesn't seem to be the same level of enticement. I also love the Mendoza move because I would do the same thing. I get the draw. I get why some guys want to do it. It wouldn't mesh with my personality. I love the staying at home and celebrating with your family. Don't travel. Have as many people there as you want in your life. Like, everybody's under the same roof.
Hard to not want to be on that
And I understand why you would want to do it. I just, for my personality, like, just being around all your buddies and your family and celebrating that way would be so hard to turn down.
I'm with you.
And you get your name called. You know where you're going to get drafted. Like, there's no doubt. There's
your
no question.
Your parents' living room gets to be on national television.
Yeah, dude. Like, hey, is your family dog sitting on the couch with you? Give him a little airtime. Right. So I just, I saw that news yesterday that he will not be going. I still will take the over of 1.5 quarterbacks. I just think we end up getting a dart situation. Somebody at the back end of the first round is like, let's grab him. We got two picks, or we'll trade in, give up a future third to get a move into the 29th overall pick and snag a QB.
The intel doesn't seem to be, and maybe I missed somebody's. I've been reading a lot about these drafts or the mock drafts, and was reading about this one in particular because some of these players I'm not as familiar with, so you're trying to learn about them, right? Mm-hmm. It definitely is not a draft that sounds like anybody wants to trade into. If anything, it's like the Seahawks are one of the teams that somebody picked. I think Field Yates is like, trying to be logical about this. They could take a running back with their last pick. I could also see him saying, we have 4 picks total in the draft. Let's get one more. We'll trade out of 32.
That's a pick for Ty Simpson that I could see. If somebody being like, Seattle doesn't want that pick. They don't really need that pick. They want more draft capital. They're willing to move back to a third round pick, and you're willing to move up and give them a future whatever, and we're going to go grab him. Because I think to your point on him going, there's a good chance he goes right out of the gate in the second round, Ty Simpson does.
Yeah.
And so if you're a team that's like, he's not going to be there by the time we're picking next, let's try and grab him right now.
My only fear or my thought, I think, going into it is my team, because you're always worried about your team, right? Like, what's your team going to focus on here? I was looking at the reverse lens. I'm looking through all the mocks, and I'm like, who's this team going to take? Who do these people think that team's going to take?
Yeah, the Eagles were this for a long time of, like, really? He fell to them again?
One that I've always given them credit for. I hate the organization, and I think their owner's absolutely bat-ass crazy. The Cowboys are good at evaluating talent, and they do pick good players. And I saw Peter Schrager did a mock, and he's basing it on what he's hearing, which I love that. I love guys that evaluate the prospects.
Yeah, I have my thought on who he will be.
Yeah, and then I love I have a lot of intel around the league. I'm going to try to get a feel. And Schrager did a mock, and he has the Cowboys, who have 2 first-round picks, getting Caleb Downs and Akeem Mezidor. And I liked both of those picks, and I'm like, damn it.
That's a good draft.
Like, are we going to get the Cowboys being really good again in my life? Like, I'm not ready for that emotionally. I have
if they don't
of it.
Get yeah, if they don't get Downs, a lot of people think they're going to get Thieneman too. He's been linked to the Cowboys for a long time.
He's one of those. So, like, you got other teams that I might root against, but I have interest in following to see, are they going to get better? I saw Sadiq being mocked to the Ravens because they just lost Isaiah Likely. Love that pick. That would make a ton of sense in my mind.
Yeah.
So just going through it, like, you don't have as many household names. As dumb as the quarterback thing can be, and I hear you on that, and yes, Sam Darnold just won the Super Bowl and Joe Burrow didn't make the playoffs, it's just always going to matter more, man. It just is. It's the SEC of the NFL. We're always going to care the most about quarterbacks.
Sure.
Because, Darnold did it, but largely the history of the league suggests you need a top-end type dude to really get over the hump.
I'm going to look this up real quick because I think the only other big draw for me, and we'll have another, we got a lot of time to talk about the draft in the next 2 weeks.
Offensive linemen are the most boring prospects to talk about in the draft.
Most important, but most boring.
Yes.
Without a doubt.
Yes.
Because you need to have a good offensive line in order to win. If you don't, you can't.
Like, what's your take on Ione from Penn State going to Detroit?
They need a guy because Ragnow retired, right? He walked away. I know they need an offensive lineman.
Right, that's all you say, though. You're not like, oh, I love it. You know, he's in the first round.
I have
round.
No idea.
Exactly.
No doubt about it. The only other thing that's drawn me in is Oregon having the chance to have three guys go in the first round, which I don't think they've ever had. Because I think Sadiq's
going to go.
And Thieneman will be a first-round pick.
Thieneman's either mid or late. He's probably played his way or performed his way into the first round.
And then Pregnon is a guy at guard who there's a lot of offensive linemen in this draft who might sneak his way into the first round as well.
Maybe, so yes.
That's the other draw for me of like, where do those guys end up going? I always like rooting for the Ducks when they go to the NFL as long as they go to the teams that I'm cool with. And even if they don't, I'll still root for them to have success. So that's what draws me in as well. But the quarterback conundrum is not great this year. Next year should be drastically different, but the funny part about that is
people are loading up for next year.
We said that a year ago now. Now we said, man, Lenora Sellers and John Mateer and what's his nuts? Nussmeier from LSU. Mm-hmm. Like Aller at Penn State. Like we went down the list of all these guys that were going to be dynamic. Arch might come out and look at all these talented players. And now we might only have one go in the first round.
A really fun angle, too, aside from the edge rushers and just how vital they are to your success. The receiver part is interesting to me in this. Mm-hmm. Like Jordan Tyson or Carnell Tate?
Yeah.
You might have five or six wide receivers taken in the first round. Mekhi Lemon just kind of sitting there?
Yeah.
Where do you go?
He was an incredible player at USC.
He was. And the problem with Tyson is not his talent. It's the motor and the injury problem.
Right.
Is that going to stay healthy? Is he going to be motivated? Carnell Tate is from
the wide receiver
the
university.
Wide receiver you right now. Yeah. Like Marvin Harrison gets bagged a little bit. He's still putting up some numbers, man.
He also has not had a functional quarterback in his NFL career.
So that's been another problem.
Doesn't have that going for
him. I personally think Omar Cooper Jr.
Yeah.
I loved his
footwork,
so good at Indiana. His ability at Indiana. I thought he was great. But he's not considered in the conversation of the top. He's more of the middle to back end of the first round. So edge rusher, wide receiver, some secondary guys, and then some sprinkle-in offensive linemen. I mean, that's your draft, right? And then Mendoza's already going to be the number one pick. So,
a couple more thoughts on the NFL, including draft history that I found interesting. One guy's like, hey, man, can I get some help? I'll give you the backstory behind that. Also, the Page Six rumors. Do we want to get to the Page Six rumors from yesterday?
Yes, I want to defend a friend.
Okay, let's do that. We'll defend a friend, talk draft history on one side of the ball next on The Fam. Well, a coach and a reporter found themselves in hot water. They say no wrongdoing was at play.
Mm-hmm.
But some photos were released yesterday on the New York Post.
Page six
got them. And those photos were of Mike Vrabel, the head coach of the New England Patriots, and Diana Rossini, who were seen on the photos. I believe this was at the coaches or, you know.
No.
No, this is different.
So this was around that time.
Okay, separate.
Vrabel was in Arizona, because I had to read the juicy
details.
I
mean, these are good details.
Vrabel was in Arizona watching Arizona State.
Okay.
What is that, pro days. Mm-hmm. Rossini, her take on this is, I was at this same place with my friends.
Okay, so you happen to be at the same hotel.
Now, it's an hour and a half from Tempe.
Yes.
So Vrabel had to drive to it.
An hour and a half.
And as Page Six reports, the website of the getaway retreat place literally highlights its romantic nature getaway for couples.
So the photos that were released were of Vrabel and Rossini basically poolside in swimsuits, hugging, holding hands, and spending some quality time together.
Also on a rooftop that the place cites is perfect for a romantic viewpoint for couples to hang out with. And both of their takes are, we were with friends, they're just not being photographed.
So Vrabel said these photos show a completely innocent interaction, and any suggestion otherwise is laughable. This doesn't deserve any further response. And Rossini said the photos don't represent the group of six people who were hanging out during the day. Like most journalists in the NFL, reporters interact with sources away from stadiums and other venues.
The tough part here is, because look, let me just get out in front of it. I very briefly got to work around Diana Rossini years and years ago. She was up in Seattle when I was an intern in Seattle, and she was very kind to me. We had interactions every day. She was very nice. I'm going to defend her here. When this is reversed, it doesn't become a story. And I think that's the unfortunate nature of our business is when it's a woman reporter interacting, it's usually looked at as, oh.
A certain way. Well, and let's, I mean, she's also had, whether it's
she
fair
had a
or not,
past allegation.
The wife of the former Washington, at the time, Redskins general manager said that, threw some allegations towards Diana Rossini,
said she got
towards
this,
her husband.
She couldn't have got this any other way than with my husband, and accused her of an affair. And she since deleted that, deleted her entire account, had to send a statement. It was like, I apologize, I was misspeaking, I was very frustrated. Yeah.
Nothing was ever proven.
No, nothing was ever proven.
Allegation that was thrown out.
I think the hard thing is you're not going to get people to believe her.
No, that's the unfortunate
part. Because here's the other side of that. These aren't, they're kind of standing close to each other photos. These are laying in lounge chairs next to each other in the hot tub together and at one point on the rooftop holding hands and dancing. So I'm not saying there's not friends there.
It doesn't seem like a normal interaction of source and reporter.
Certainly the photos would make you wonder.
If you bump into somebody you knew, like if you saw some, you know, like a reporter or somebody you used to work with, you see you happen to be on vacation, I'm at a hotel, I'm at a pool, you might sit down and have a chat, like, hey, great to see you. Let's chat, let's catch up. Like I could see the whole we're sitting around a pool or we're in our bathing suits because we're at the pool and it's nice weather outside.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that took it to a bit of a different level that are like you wouldn't go that far.
The other thing is like not that she's wrong, because The Athletic came out and backed her and was like, this is not proper reporting.
Yes.
She very well had a group of friends there for all we know. It is odd that there's like not even on the rooftop one, there's not a single human involved in those photos.
No.
And when you look, they have a photo from super far away. All you see is them on the rooftop where they danced.
Yeah. We'll see. Time will tell on this one. Never great to have that come out when you're in the insider reporting field, if you will, because you need sources and information, and it makes people's minds go to certain places. But to your point, and I've, you know, anybody who's ever been around Diana Rossini has nothing but great things to say about her.
Yeah.
She's incredibly respected in the industry and all of that. That made me think of, have you followed at all, totally random pivot here, but kind of in the same line, have you followed the Nate Oates story out of Alabama? Have you seen what he's doing?
His extension?
No. His engagement.
No, but now I'm interested. What's going on with Nate Oates?
I mean,
we have a fake engagement?
Not a fake engagement. We have a bit of a Sharon Moore situation on our hands, just not to that level.
Oh, like a lead staffer, and so, they've been in a relationship secretly.
Nate Oates quietly got divorced in 2023. Didn't really say anything about it, but he split from his wife.
Okay.
And around that time, there was somebody who kept getting pay raises inside the athletic department and job promotions at Alabama, like, you know, secretary, chief of, you know, whatever the lineup, the ladder, you know, each rung of the ladder is, kept getting pay raises and new jobs. He just got engaged to that lady who around the same time got a massive pay raise and a job promotion. Her name is Alex Aceta. I don't know how to say her last, Aceta, I don't know how to say her last name. She was a staffer on the basketball team. He divorced his wife 2 years ago or three years ago and just married a former staffer who he was giving promotions and money to.
I mean, look.
You don't dip the pen in company ink,
man. Well, it's an ex-staffer.
Well, now because they're married or he's engaged.
Yeah.
He's,
now that they took that step, now you can't be mixing the company.
He doesn't need to cook the books anymore and give her more money because she's going to get his money. She's marrying him.
Dude, this is on the Tuscaloosa news.
This is like, yeah, they're actually talking about this. Of like, that's pretty, like, come on, man.
He's very interesting. He clearly is a very smart and good coach.
Underrated shady.
Also really loves to dabble in some questionable characters or has things happen.
Yes.
And now you have this off the court.
The whole court. Miller situation with the other teammate and the gun that transpired. Yeah. You had the player with the pound of weed this year.
Well, more than that, maybe a pound.
A lot of weed.
I think it was like 2 pounds.
Tried to get him back in
2.1.
time. 2.1 pounds of weed. Like, yeah, dude, that's a bit of a problem on your hands, Nate Oates, and your stupid staffer. We got issues, Nate. We got issues.
But they had to extend him so he wouldn't take the UNC job.
Yes. I mean, he's won.
I mean,
he's
win.
Been a good coach.
Did he get to the Sweet 16 this year or the Elite Eight?
Sweet 16, I think.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, sounds right. Yeah, you can't stop winning. I mean, what are we doing here?
What means much mean more?
She began as a, so he was married. His wife was going through lymphoma
in
2015.
Yes, he left her after she recovered from cancer.
And this gal, Alex Aceta, began as a student assistant.
Yes.
In 2015.
Yes.
served as operations coordinator from 17 to 21.
Mm-hmm.
Director of player ops, saw all the team travel, scheduling, budgeting, and programming events.
Now they're engaged. Wow. I'm sure the relationship just came out of thin air, though.
She works as the Dallas Mavericks guest experience coordinator, according to her LinkedIn profile.
Wonder who got that job. You know, I wonder how you got that job. Huh? What'd you know there?
Look, it's not great, but maybe love is love, and maybe that marriage truly crumbled.
You never know.
You don't know what those conversations were.
Love is love. Lesson of the day.
How about sports and sex?
Sports and sex,
intertwined,
man.
Forever, baby.
Yeah, I'm rooting for, like, I like Diana Rossini. She's funny. I like a lot of her content. She's had moments as a reporter. She's, you know, kind of missed a couple of things or misled on a couple of things. But ultimately, she's a very entertaining interview guest. She goes on a lot of podcasts or radio networks. All, you know, she's big with Le Batard. She goes on Pardon My Take all the time. So I truly enjoy her work. I just,
Just sadly, this is the messed up thing.
It,
the photos are not great. I fully acknowledge that.
No.
Nobody believes the person when they deny it.
No. That's the way it works.
By the way, good news if this was happening, the good news of this whole thing is this never happens if the Patriots win the Super Bowl because he had to cut off his unit.
That is true. It would have been gone.
So maybe Vrabel tanked the Super Bowl knowing an affair was around the corner.
Because he was with Diana at the time and didn't want to ruin the relationship.
I mean, talk about a buzzkill.
Yeah.
Love is love.
Love is love.
Pull down your pants. It's just my belly button. That's all you got. I don't know what you got, you know?
Put your finger in there. Let's get to, coming up next, the draft capital used on one side of the ball.
Wouldn't
and somebody
hurt?
Looking around saying, hey, can I get a little help around here? That's next. Well, a lot of thoughts coming in. Some we can't read on the air.
Whoa.
Happy morning. Happy Wednesday morning, everybody.
What
it is a happy morning.
Ease the pain of a triple backdoor?
Swag's not
into, that up or shut up.
Not into people putting their finger in your belly button?
No.
Do you have an innie?
Yes.
You do?
Squeeze them damn things. Make sure you got two.
You can't believe you guys dropped that right before I'm supposed to do an update.
You got an ear and Audi guy, aren't you? You look like an Audi guy.
I got an innie. I got a deep innie.
You got a deep innie?
Yeah, I used to think I had a normal belly
button. How deep are we talking?
Almost like
how much of my finger can go in there?
Probably a quarter of it. I had a birthday party once with a swimming pool, and I took my shirt off. I always had a normal belly button. And someone goes, damn, Sprague, how deep is that thing? And they were like, put your finger in it. And I did. And I was like, oh, my God, it is like a quarter of my finger. I don't know how you
I'm always curious to test out, you know, how much can get in there.
There's some good lint in there. Every day I got to clean that trap
out. You
got to
dig it out. You got to dig it out.
Yeah.
Here we go, man. Here we go.
I will say.
On a regular basis, you got to clean that. Get that finger in there, dig around a little bit.
My God, we need football season.
The second kid, not at all. The first kid, I was 25 when she was born. And I remember the doctor was like, do you want to cut the umbilical cord? And I was like, yeah. And I grabbed the scissors. Uh-huh. I put it there. And I stopped for a second. He goes, do you know what to do? And I said, well, I just cut it, don't I? And he goes, well, yeah. And I was like, okay. And he's like, what are you waiting for? And I go, if I cut at a certain angle, is it an innie or an outie? And he goes, this has no basis on innie and outie.
Did you want to give her an innie or an outie?
I wanted an innie.
You want an innie?
Look, it's nothing against the Audi, but you notice an Audi when
an
Audi's there.
Audi stands out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
When you see an Audi in the wild, it's like, whoa, it takes you a while.
If I had an Audi, I'd rub it.
I'm double taking the Audi every time I see it.
Yeah.
There's like you kind of glance through it.
It's
like,
a quick glance.
Wait a minute, was that an Audi? And then you go back for another look.
Yeah.
Because I'm just curious, what's going on there?
Well, it's not a circumcision. You don't make the choice.
What leads to the Audi?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a great question.
I don't know. And he didn't really give me an answer. I just cut the umbilical cord and prayed. Give her an innie.
Yeah, you really hope you don't screw that one up.
Yeah, it's not it's not even that you do. You told me it had no bearing on the outcome. You just cut it and hope.
Let's see. An Audi belly button is primarily caused by how the skin heals and scars after the cord stump falls off.
I can't even believe you looked that up.
I was curious. I genuinely am.
So the Audi is just remnants that never...
No,
I guess.
It's just
hung on.
It's just the way
it's just the scar. It's where,
but it's a
the skin
protruding
does.
Scar.
I
interesting.
Know.
The scar tissue forms in the weeks after birth, and it dictates whether it becomes an innie or an outie.
Yeah, my brother's one of his best friends had an outie, and it was the first time my brother had seen it. And I remember when he left, my brother's like, "What's on his stomach?"
These people like they're unicorns. We saw an alien in the wild.
Well, no, I
you
mean,
saw one
now,
in the flesh.
Are there percentages? Is there a percentage?
I'm looking that up next. That's my next Google search.
Like, is it right-handed versus left-handed?
It has to be.
It has to be something like that.
Let's see. What percentage of people have an innie belly button? Approximately 90% of people have an innie belly button.
That's smaller than left-handed people.
Exactly. What is the percentage of left-handed people?
I just thought it was like 13 to 20%.
That's up there with like being red-haired.
Yeah, probably.
Is that about 10%? Redheads, about
10%? I think so. Yeah. Might be a little higher.
Yeah, 10 to 12% is left-handed. Yeah. So you're right, right in that same ballpark.
Okay.
Look at that.
The more you know.
Freaks.
Wait. We talked about like three different things there. You talking
Who's
about
the freak? Are lefties freaks?
Your kids redheaded.
Are we freaks for talking about this?
You calling your own kid a freak?
Are outies freaks?
Hell no.
We're all freaks, dude. What are we doing?
Teddy's really into belly buttons. Really into it.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you not?
There's
you
a thing there.
You got a hole in your stomach, weird. And you're like, hey, dada, belly button.
Yeah.
And I got one, too.
For sure.
Look, man.
Did you cut the cord?
We all got one. I did cut the cord, yeah.
Yeah.
I did.
I didn't want to. I was very grossed out by the whole process, but yeah. I felt like I had to.
I felt like I
know?
Was going to faint, but, you know, we got through it.
Definitely did.
We did okay there.
I don't know how my wife did that.
Well, how about we pivot to draft capital, shall
there we?
There
we go. Thank you.
You don't want to do any more any segments?
Are you any or outie on this draft capital?
I thought this was interesting. So we talk a lot about Josh Allen.
Any and outie as a sports segment.
That's a great segment.
Are you any or are you outie?
That's a great bit.
Yeah. I think that's a really good
bit. Is there a sponsor of like a belly button piercing company that will do that for us?
Well,
can you surgically change your
sponsor is now all the new In-N-Out burgers that are
Ooh,
popping
In-N-Out,
up all over
yeah.
the place.
In your Audi brought to you by In-N-Out.
Yeah.
Look, call us, people. Okay?
We give you the special sauce.
We'll put... Never mind. Stop right there. Hold it. What's the matter with you, man? I got 3 more minutes in this segment. How am I supposed to operate at this point?
I can't look at him.
God, don't look at Swag. Swag's the worst. He is the worst when these moments happen on the
show. I told him this Friday. He makes me break and I make him break.
You do.
We yell at each other, but we also make each other laugh in a weird way.
You guys would be horrible on SNL together.
Yeah, we'd be terrible.
Oh, yeah.
As in like some SNL bit. It would not get, it would just stay on the ground
floor. Oh, no.
Okay.
We can't trust your ass now.
Watch no.
No, we cannot. Josh Allen needs to win the big one. We say that a lot about him.
Yes, he
Everybody
does.
Focus. Let's talk about quarterbacks. He can't win a Super Bowl, right? I saw this. The NFL draft is 2 weeks away. Do you realize? So Warren Sharp put together a graphic of the total draft capital spent on offensive players in the NFL draft since 2020.
This is going to be a dumb amount of capital.
I mean, just insane, right? So just like the number of offensive players that you have drafted, do you care to guess by a wide margin who is the number one team in the NFL in offensive players drafted since 2020?
Buffalo.
It is not.
Kansas City?
It is not.
Offensive players.
Kansas City is third lowest on the list.
This
and
includes,
I'll get to Buffalo
so
in a second.
This includes offensive
first
linemen?
To first to
the last pick of the draft. Offensive linemen, wide receivers,
Dude,
tight ends, running backs, quarterbacks.
It's going to be a bad team.
It's a very bad team.
The Jets.
Yes. The Jets significantly number one on this list. You know who's dead last on this list?
Is it Seattle?
The Buffalo Bills.
There you go.
The Buffalo Bills have drafted the fewest number of offensive players since 2020. And I don't know. I don't know where they're going to go in the draft. We certainly have had conversations about them adding DJ Moore, but it's a quarterback who is always going to be under the spotlight of can he or can he not get over the hump. And we did this a lot with Aaron Rodgers at the end of his run in Green Bay, where it's like, are they going to take a receiver? And then they took Jordan Love.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you didn't get him any help there. Well, you had a chance to get this receiver, but you didn't want to take him there because you can't take a receiver in the first round. And then they finally move on from him and they take a receiver in the first round. I just thought it was interesting. Some of the bottom teams in the league, so your bottom four and offensive draft capital in the last, whatever it would be, 6 years, 5 years, Buffalo's dead last. The Rams are second to last. Chiefs third to last.
Yeah, the Rams mostly trade for their
mostly
guys.
Mostly trade for that. Chiefs third to last, and the Philadelphia Eagles fourth to last.
What
so
do all
many,
those teams have in common?
They've been successful
right
and won
in
a lot
of
games.
The race, if not winning the
Philly's
the title.
Done a great job of drafting defensive players that helped lead them to a championship. Kansas City lands Mahomes, and that just, you know, you're good to go there. The Rams trade for Stafford, which elevates them and puts them over the hump. But it's not like they haven't, you know, not taken guys, right? Cooper Kupp was great for a long time in L.A., helped him win a Super Bowl. Puka Nacua, who is now in rehab, that happened while I was gone. That was an interesting story.
Yep.
Has been really good early in his NFL career. So maybe it's the idea that they're hitting on guys, and that means that they don't have to take other players at that position, and they trust those guys. And then you look at Buffalo at the bottom, and it's like, well, they took a swing on Keon Coleman, and that didn't really work out for you.
So it's interesting to look at the reverse, too. Draft capital on defensive guys.
Yeah. Yeah, he did one on the other side of the ball, too. That's funny to look at.
The number one team on defensive talent since the same mark, 2020, Jacksonville.
Right.
That paid pretty big dividends for them this year. I think they led the league in turning offenses over.
They were good defense this year.
Detroit second, Arizona third, Philly fourth, Atlanta fifth, barely. They're like right there with the Eagles. Dallas, Ravens, Giants, and then it trails off pretty good. Cincinnati, Washington, Minnesota, Seattle, Houston. And then it starts to trail off.
Well, I wouldn't have Cincinnati in the top 10.
I wouldn't have either.
Well,
right?
I think it shows you how many
whiffs
they've had. I mean,
well, also
they
how many
talent,
guys they've let leave because they don't want to pay him. Well, and so you're drafting a guy because you want a guy on a rookie scale contract on top of it.
There's no doubt about it. But you look at the defensive picks there, like you got a pretty big mix. Whereas you look at the reverse, it's not that offensive guys don't matter. It's that you're looking at all the best teams that are near the bottom or the midway point of the bottom that are having success versus the teams going all out and not being able to identify it.
Yeah, the Jets' number on offense is really funny to look at over the last 5 years. They have thrown the kitchen sink at offensive draft picks, and it just, I mean, not that Hall hasn't been good.
And every, like, analytical look.
Garrett Wilson's
look.
Been good, that's fine, but that
Breece Hall is good.
Yeah, it's clearly not worked out for him as a unit as a whole. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how you pivot from a comment about belly buttons that was hard to overcome to talking about draft capital.
So are we any or are we outy on offensive draft capital?
I'm any on the Bills getting Josh Allen some more help on that side of the ball.
I saw Bean a while back. He was on McAfee when McAfee was at Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a real, at least on the show, and it's performance-based, I get it. He kind of stepped to that dais of like a real air of confidence and swagger and talked about DJ Moore's going to be this and that. And I'm like, dude, you underperform and you're fired. Where's
Should've
this
been.
Coming from?
Should have been originally. It's a Neil O'Shea, Terry Stotts situation.
It has that vibe.
You disappointed in the playoff, you clean house. I don't blame you for wanting to do that, but just throwing the coach under the bus never made a lot of sense to me. Let's get to a rivalry. And when was the last time there was a great one in this sport? And do we feel like this can become it? I'll tell you what it is with some audio to boot. That's next on The Fan. Hey, a new trend in baseball. We'll get to that coming up top of the hour. News that happened last week when I was out that I didn't know what happened last week when I was out and then made official today.
Oh,
so we'll talk about it again.
Very odd, by the way that was handled.
Because I was out. I mean, I was unplugged completely last week. And so you told me that was actually announced on Friday. And I'm like, well, news to me. I just saw it this morning. I had no idea.
The funniest thing was the timing of it. I did a segment on, you know, being excited about Connor Griffin. Like Swag and I were talking about being excited.
He got a hit in his first at bat.
Dude, he's a 19-year-old kid. He hadn't had somebody that young since Juan Soto. It'd been a while. And the Pirates are sneaky good. They're fun to watch. I watched them yesterday with Skeens on the bump, beating the Pods. I talked about it, and maybe 30 minutes later, I look up MLB Network because that's what I watch every morning. Boom, it pops up. Sources, Connor Griffin going to agree to a 9-year, $140 million deal. And I'm like,
oh, okay.
I brought it back at the end of the show to just say, hey, this is out there. So
it's pretty big news. Number one prospect in baseball. It's a big deal when you get a guy like that locked up to an extension. And it was actually signed today. So we'll talk about that because it is a new trend and also an interesting story of another guy who signed a deal and what it meant for the locker room. So
it's not been as great in that locker room because this guy's playing and the other guy's not playing yet.
Exactly. Let me ask you this. You know me. You know what week it is. You know what's on the top of my mind every day. Has there ever been a golf rivalry that has enticed you as a fan?
A golf rivalry?
A golf rivalry. A matchup of like, ooh, those guys are in the final group. Yeah. They're going back and forth.
Two.
And I'm interested in that. What are they?
Well, Koepka DeChambeau was fun mainly because of the off-camera stuff that you knew we hated each other. On the course, I've only had two in my life.
Okay.
David Duval, which was my introduction to golf with Tiger early in his career, because David Duval had legitimately like a year and a half run of being
one of the best players in the world.
Is he better than Tiger? And he wore the shades, and I hated those shades.
Oakley shades.
Yeah, dude, and I rooted for Tiger, so I hated David Duval.
One of the bigger what-ifs in the history of sports.
And then it would be Phil and Tiger.
Yep.
And that was I was always going to pick Tiger in any rivalry, but here comes Lefty to kind of contend, and he finally wins a major, and then it coincides with Tiger's downfall of the affair stuff, and So, yeah, those are the only two really for me.
That got you, like, Phil and Tiger in a final group. Oh, my God, this
is David Duval and Tiger are kind of a 1-2 back-and-forth thing. Like, that's kind of it in my life. Kepka and DeChambeau were a different rivalry for
me. Swag, what about you? Is that the same, or you got more old-school ones?
Yeah, more Tiger-Phil.
Tiger-Phil is the classic.
I saw a little bit of Jack and Tom Watson, but that was very respectful.
Well,
it was more about the golf.
Yeah.
Historically speaking, though, wouldn't the bigger one have been Jack and Arnie? Wasn't that always the bigger rivalry?
Yeah, and that's before.
Because there was Arnie's Army, but Jack was the better player, but Arnie was more beloved by the fans. Yeah. It was that vibe to it.
Yeah.
So there's been good ones over the years. I feel like it's something that, to your point, like Tiger and Phil's the last one that stands out in my mind. Because the Brooks and Bryson thing was fun, and he hated each other.
Those guys did not see eye to eye or like each other early
on.
No, and
they grew up kind of roughly in same eras, and they played youth tournaments.
And
like, Tiger's mom hated Phil. Like, there's that side. Like, that's deep-seated. And Phil was always second fiddle. He was always the Robin, and he always wanted to be the Batman, and he just never could break through. And he had a great career, but was never to the level of Tiger. So I thought it was interesting. Last year, we had a final pairing in the final round of the Masters. It was Bryson, and it was Rory. Now, the year before, we had a U.S. Open, one of the more memorable U.S. Opens that we've had in the last however many years, when Rory misses two putts inside 3 feet to blow the tournament, should have won another major. Bryson makes the miraculous sand shot, wins the U.S. Open at Pinehurst. And so we've seen this final grouping a couple of times in recent years, and Bryson was asked about it yesterday, and I thought his answer was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's great if we can continue to have a rivalry. I don't see any problem with that. I mean, if anything, that helps kind of create more buzz around the game of golf. Do I respect him as an individual? 100%. Do I want to beat him every time I see him? Absolutely. There's no question about it. But I think that's what's so brilliant about the game of golf is that juxtaposition of having that respect, sportsmanlike respect, and then wanting to just absolutely beat the living you-know-what out of him, right? But, you know, it's one of those things, like, I got him at Pinehurst, he got me here, and I hope there's more of those to come because it's great for the game.
Just on that, did you walk away last year thinking, I know what I need to do now and I'd love another chance, if not against him, but just in general at the Masters?
Yeah, definitely.
So there was a golfer.
There was a vibe of, did you see the Amazon doc that they did on Rory?
I didn't,
no. It's a good watch.
Read the page 6 story on Rory in the
Did you dive into that one? Yeah.
It was on the Rossini article, I clicked it.
Shocking, right? So the Amazon doc was pretty good. One of the things they went into was, Rory talked about this in the aftermath of winning, was basically his biggest challenge of the day was having to deal with Bryson. And then he didn't talk to him the entire round, and Bryson was trying to have conversations
with him. He was
all pissed
off about that.
Bryson was butthurt that he didn't say anything. And then Rory tells a story about they're on the 9th green, and they have equal distance birdie putts somewhat, but Rory thought he was clearly out, and it was his turn
because he wanted to go second.
And he wanted to go first to get put the pressure on Bryson to make the birdie.
Oh, gotcha.
And on the green, Bryson's like, well, let's flip a tee for it, buddy. What do you think? And he's like, dude, this is the final round of the Masters. No, we can go get a rules official if you want, but it's my turn. And Bryson backed down, and Rory views it as this, like, I stood my ground, and he made the birdie putt, Bryson missed, and he said that was this big moment, turning point. And it just got me thinking, I don't know if they'll turn into it. I don't know if they're at that level, and I don't know how many final rounds it would take to get there, or how many more majors for Bryson. Very, very different players, and there seems to be an air of they don't like each other and they don't get along very well, and so there's the ingredients there for a rivalry. Now it's up to what will it turn into in the years to come.
You know, the funny thing to me is having just heard what they say and how they act, I think one doesn't like the other, and the other one,
Rory doesn't like Bryson more than Bryson doesn't like Rory,
Bryson already went through something like this with Brooks.
Yeah.
So I think, and Bryson has completely revamped the image, right? He's become the new trendy, fun YouTube guy.
He's huge on YouTube.
And he's on LIV, but when he comes back to the major championships, he's in contention again. He's a pretty good golfer. And I think because of that, you more view it of like, Rory clearly doesn't like him, whereas I think he's kind of unbothered, and he tries to get in Rory's kitchen a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good assessment.
And so I do think it would be great for the sport.
I just remember the scene of them walking to the first tee.
Yeah.
It didn't turn into that because Bryson didn't play well, and it turned into Rory versus Justin Rose at the end. But that scene of them walking to the first tee, it felt like a heavyweight fight.
No doubt about it.
And it was PGA Tour, LIV, like you had that angle to it too. Like that was as big as it could get.
And I think both treat it that way.
Yeah.
The problem is you have another guy that's leading the way the last 2 years named Scottie Scheffler that's in tournament and he quietly just either gets arrested or he's winning a tournament in blowout fashion. Yes. So
he's going to win by seven strokes. That's how this will turn out this year.
And you don't need every rivalry to have the one and the two. It's really hard in that sport nowadays with how deep the field is. But it would be, I mean, you're talking about a perfect weekend setup. If you give me Sunday, Bryson and Rory within a stroke of each other in the last like six holes, like I know that's going to be great television. Yeah. And I'll be honest, I don't really hate Bryson. I don't agree with everything Bryson does and his decision-wise, but I love athletes that are out, that talk, that like make me think or give me entertainment. And Rory and Bryson give me those in different ways.
Yeah.
And so I would be a little split. Like, it'd be cool to see Rory win two in a row. I also wouldn't be mad if Bryson ended up winning.
It's kind of fun to see the villain win one, right?
A little bit,
and not that he's the villain that he used to be, but he's a little more hot buttony, I would say, in the golf world.
Well,
for fans,
did we say Swag last week was the Joker? Who was that? We were talking about him, and you said...
Oh, it was Dan Hurley.
Dan Hurley is the Joker. Mm. A lot of people hate him and don't like him. There is a huge amount of support for him.
Yes, there is.
I think Bryson is also the sport. I think he's the Joker.
He's a comic villain.
He's got a lot of people rooting for him.
Evil.
Looks like a little psychotic.
He's chaotic.
He's got a few screws.
Right.
Some of the stuff he argues with, you're like, you know what? You're kind of bringing up a good point here.
He shot a guy alive on television. You're like, whoa, what are you doing? You're awful. And
Damn.
Then he's like, am I? And you're like, oh, are you?
That guy might have been a bad guy for all I know. I don't know.
Right. So, like, I think Bryson adds an element of that to the weekend. You know, hopefully we just get a good one, man. Like, just give me a classic here.
Yeah, give me a good one. That's all I can ask for. Rivalries are great. Hopefully that turns into something. I thought it was good that Bryson talked about it yesterday.
I didn't know you were going to do that as a segment, because the funny thing is I was watching Brewers Red Sox last night randomly, and it was the eighth inning. And just out of nowhere for no reason, they had announced something, but you couldn't hear what it was in the at Fenway. And in the middle of a Brewer at-bat, you just hear this random... F the Yankees! And I remember just thinking, like, how great it is that there's sports fans that hate a team that much.
They're not even playing in the game.
Like, imagine us with a home game against the Jazz, and during a free throw, we just ran, F the Lakers!
Should, every game.
It makes it so much better.
At the six-minute mark of every first quarter.
So good.
What are we doing here, people? All right, lots to get to in the final hour. Status story coming up at 9:15. The Blazers back in action tonight in San Antonio. We'll start there with a trend in baseball. Will it continue? And also, has it ruffled feathers in one locker room? We'll start there next on 105.1 FM The Fam.